Today we conclude our Listening Project special series on race and equality. The past month we've heard individuals talk about their personal experiences. Back in November, Carbondale Community Arts held a 50th anniversary commemoration of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. As part of the program, they hosted a Race Card Project installment. The Race Card Project is a national initiative that asks people to talk about their experience with race in 6 words. Some of the participants shared their words with us. Today, we hear from Najjar Abdul Musawir of Carbondale.
My 6 words: hurt, determination, distrust. Hurt, determination, and distrust. And the reason I have these 6 words and I re-emphasize them is because living in Harvey, Illinois, in the suburbs of Chicago, and my father working, and we decided to get us a nice home, and it just happened. I didn't know, I was a kid, but we moved into which a neighborhood was going through, at the time was going through white flight. There were white people living there, but as more black people moved into the community, we noticed that this beautiful community, this beautiful home, all the white people moved out and black people moved in. And that also affected the school. And for those kids who lived in that white community, a lot of them were very racist. That's just the way it was brought up. It was a way of life for them. It was an institution for them. Even the kids I had a friend named Steve. He was white, and we used to hustle together. Now, the funny thing about it, I could never go by his house, could never hang with his parents. He would have to always meet me somewhere. And I remember we had cleaned this lady's yard and we had our money. Well, we messed around and went to the store, the neighborhood store, to buy, spend our money, get cookies and candy and stuff like that. And the money didn't come out even. He said because he was white, he supposed to get the extra money. And I'm like, huh? Now, I wasn't thinking black and white. I was thinking about my money. And so I'm like, man, how you going to figure, take all of it? We got to work something out. Well, we get into an argument and literally get into a fight in the store. We're pushing each other, shoving. And the owner of the store, who was white, grabbed me and threw me out of the store. I mean, literally slung me out of the store. So I'm standing outside waiting on for Steve to come out, And then he came out and I said, Steve, man, why you do this? And suddenly our friendship ended. I think it was in the 6th or 7th grade at the time. And so I was, the community was very racist, even the elementary school I went to. I remember one time I got on the basketball team, and we had practice after school. Instead of me, like everybody else, get out of school, leave the school, let them lock it up, I'm running around inside the school, running around, and I get caught. But the funny thing about it, I got caught because I looked in the classroom and I saw the principal and one of the teachers kissing. And I'm like, man, look at them white folks hugging and kissing, grown folks. Now, since I'm older now, I probably didn't realize that he probably was married and she was too. But, so he saw me and he ran out and grabbed me and helped me. I was on the second floor and he bent me over the banister and said, you little nigga. He said, I'm going to throw you over this banister. You didn't see nothing, did you? I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, man, my heart is racing because I'm worried about this. If he let me go, I'm dead. He messed around, shoved me, and I fell down the stairs. And he said, get out of the building. And he just looked around. He followed, watching me, watch. I left out of the building. I never said anything to anybody until I was practically grown, because I knew if I told my parents, I shouldn't have been in the school. So I knew my dad was going to beat the heck out of me. Sometimes I'll get a whooping from the principal, because back then they had paddles. And it seemed like always black kids was in the office getting paddled. Every time I look, say, hey, man, that's always us. Maybe the only bad was quote unquote, right? And so even the elementary school I went to was very racist. And then they came up with busing. And so I wound up going to Thornton Ridge High School in Dalton, Illinois, instead of Thornton High School that's actually in Harvey, Illinois. I was kind of excited because it was different, but I didn't know what to expect. But that's when I really felt hurt. That's when I really felt determined, and that's when I really felt a great sense of distrust was in high school. I was in a classroom, a science class, and I just couldn't get what the teacher was talking about, and I kept raising my hand, and I held my hand up, and he would never say anything to me. He just ignored me. Another student raised their hand, and they gave them attention. none of the black students would just ignore us. And I'm like, but it, I mean, so I got upset. I mean, I didn't understand racism at the time. I just knew it was a teacher who ignored me. Or maybe, you know, I don't know if he ignored me. I know he saw me because he looked at my hands up. So I yelled out, I said, why? I said, got my hand up. Why'd you keep it overlooking me? And the guy sitting next to him was a football player. Grabbed me by my neck. Another white classmate grabbed me by my neck and slammed me to the lab table. And I was like, what the heck? And he just choking me. So I grab a pen, and I'm swinging, and I'm hitting him with stabbing him to get him off me. They take me down to the principal. Long story short, took me down to the principal and took him down because they say you got to have him checked because he got stabbed. And they accused me of attacking him. And even the teacher said I attacked him. Never said about him holding me down, choking me on the lab table. So I'm like, man, I don't trust teachers. I don't trust these white classmates. Man, I don't trust nobody. You know, this is, you know, it was like, and I'm hurt because nobody believes me. Because I said, I know I ain't crazy. And so I said, I'm determined to do something. So I knew that they like athletes. So I got into gymnastics. And I actually got a gold medal in gymnastics. I started doing gymnastics, and I really liked doing gymnastics. And so I did so well that the coach always looked out for me, even to the point that I didn't even have to study. And so I said, wow, started feeling, you know, I started saying, well, okay, now I'm starting to be treated like some of these white guys, right? You know, not knowing that wasn't a good thing at the time, right? And, but my teammates didn't even have no respect for me. When we go compete, my teammates would crack my locker open and urinate and defecate all over my clothes, you know, and then I'm sitting in the back. Sometimes I'll just take them and just leave them in the toilet or, I want to salvage it, but it, you know, I just leave my gymnastic outfit on and just, you know, get in the back of the bus, sit and just wait till I got home. But in my 11th year, I decided to say, I'm not doing this no more. I'm tired of competing. The coach tried to encourage me to keep going because 1 year I actually won a gold medal. I was the only African American, and it was 140 people competing across the state. I was the last one to do my routine, and I actually won. I couldn't believe it. It didn't make sense to how possible. You know, how did I win? You know, I didn't understand. But the thing is, the person that I was training with was a guy who was on the varsity team named Dan Carotlo, something like that. Dan Carotlo. I don't know where he's at today, but he didn't talk to nobody. He just trained. Matter of fact, he could tumble so smoothly. They look like he looked like a combination between a professional ballet dancer and Bruce Lee. And I'm like, wow, man, this guy got masks. So I said, man, can you show me? And he would show me. He was white, you know, but he didn't play the games that everybody else played. And so I imitated him. I listened to him carefully how to perform, how to the mathematics and the science of how to elevate the body and so forth. And next thing I knew, I won. But my teammates were so bad to me, I just couldn't do it no more. And when I quit, suddenly my grades became an issue. And when my grades became an issue, I realized that I didn't know the difference between O-R-E and A-R, I mean, A-R-E and O-U-R. And it was like, you know, I was just that naive. You know, in high school, finally getting a little attention. You know, the girls and the guys and white folks ain't treating me as bad, you know, because I'm winning. But it's like, next thing I knew, long story short, I get kicked out of school. I can't keep up. I couldn't get into another school. I'm on the streets, and I'm like, man, this is crazy. So I had to try to get me a job. I wound up working at Ingalls Hospital in Harvey, Illinois. And the thing about that is that once I got the job, there was one gentleman who was white, and he just maybe, I don't know if he was racist or not. He just mean. You know what I'm saying? He was just mean, you know. And the reason I say he was mean because he didn't just treat me that way. He treated the white workers like that. He treated everybody mean, men, women, children. He just mean. But he said something one time, because he wasn't my boss. He was in another area. And I would bring the linen. For a linen crew, I roll the carts to have them sanitized and so forth. And he used to say stuff. I said, you ain't my boss, you know. You know, you ain't gonna talk to me like that. And so he said, nigga, I'm gonna get fired. And I'm like, fired? Ain't fired nobody. Well, who would have known that 3 months later, this guy was over our department. He got switched over to our department, and he fired me. I was like, oh, gosh, I cannot trust white people. I said, I can't believe this. I lost my job. I'm out of school, you know, and I'm just like, I'm frustrated. I'm just extremely frustrated, you know, because I had realized there was not one white person that I felt that I could trust. There wasn't white workers that I actually felt that was humane. I hadn't had any experiences in elementary school, in high school, and even just in everyday life where there was a decent white person. Every time I seen them, they either was beating us up, threatening us, trivializing us, marginalizing us. I mean, it was, when I say us, I mean people of color. This is my experience. I remember it was an incident where the police had stopped me and my friend, and my friend and the officer getting, you know, to some words back and forth. And next thing I know, the police officer's partner got out of the car, literally took one of his sticks and hit my friend. Pow! Shut up, nigga. You know, and hit him. It just went to work. And I said, wait, you can't do that to him. And I didn't do nothing. Just say, don't do that to him. Next thing I know, bam, I got hit. And they worked us over real good. I mean, we tried to fight it back, but they worked us over good. Got in their cars and drove off. Didn't arrest us, didn't charge them, and they just worked us over. And so, okay, like, man, I'm hurt. Man, I'm determined that, man, I can't live like this, and I don't trust nobody. And so it's like, what do you go from here? And all this anger that had built up into me, I remember it was a friend, well, he really wasn't a friend, he was a guy that I knew and socialized with, convinced me to commit a crime. And the sad thing about it, that was a bad time for me to, it's no good time to do that, let me be clear on that. But I messed around and wound up committing an armed robbery with this other guy. And we was robbing this white guy. And the sad thing about it, I was mad at this white guy because he was white. I was so mad. I wasn't mad at him for the other reason that I'm in a situation where everything was crashing down around me. And this white guy here is talking crazy. And we trying to stick him up, and it went bad. The white guy wound up getting hurt in the process. I got caught, the other guy got away. I wound up going to prison. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? You know? And it was one or two hours in prison that I met some Muslim prisoners, and we were sitting around talking. These older ones were talking to me and some more younger prisoners, and said, why are you in here? And so when I told what happened to me, they said, oh, okay, you know what your problem is. I said, what you mean my problem? He said, well, you're angry. You're so angry that you don't know how to address it intellectually. You don't know how to use your intellect to check your emotions. You don't know how you carry the responsibility of your actions. And I'm like, dude, man, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. So they gave me some stuff to read, and they come and asked us about what they gave some literature and asked us about what we read. Well, long story short, they said you can't read, can you? I said, yeah, I read. My ego would let me admit it. They said, no, we're gonna help you read. So they take me to the prison yard and they taught me how to read. Got me into a GD program. Got my GD. And then they had me read a dictionary. I had to read the dictionary for a certain amount of time every day. And once I finished it, I had to reread it again. And next thing I knew, my vocabulary increased tremendously. I was remembering words, not even trying to memorize them, and started using sentences. But the thing is that I started learning. And then one of the brothers had, the Muslim brothers had said, why you think you were so angry at white folks? And why did it become violent? And the more he talked with me, the more I realized that not only was I disappointed in the way I was treated by the white people that I came into contact with, but one of my favorite heroes at the time as a kid was James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart in the gangster movies. So I started reflecting on this. So I told him, he said, yeah, you imitating the very people you said you don't like. And then you turn around and chose the worst ones amongst them to imitate. And as they continued to talk to me and analyze it, I started realizing, oh, damn, I'm tripping. And so I started, I started reading and reading and reading. So I started studying psychology. I studied sociology. I read every single book I can get in terms of art, because I became an artist. That's what they asked me what I want to do. I said, I want to call. They said, well, you got to read every book you can on artists and learn about grant writing, art for kids, learn that all. So that's what I did for 10 years. 10 years while I was in prison, I did that. And so as I continued to understand me and understand what I went through, once I was able to become free, I was reborn. It's like in a song by Maxwell, one of my wife's favorite singers, where he said, I wasn't reborn until I was broken. And so I felt that. I said, okay, cool, I'm reborn. And so as a result, I continued to move forward. I continued to start feeling less hurt, you know, because healing, it hurts to heal. And so I understood that. So I knew that some of the hurt I was feeling was not necessarily the hurt that they was giving. It was the hurt of the healing. Once I understood that, it was easy to handle the hurt. Then I realized my determination to be able to do for self and understand self was more important than determination to challenge them and try to punish them or to be angry at them about what they did to me. And lastly, distrust. That the idea of distrust is that I need to learn to trust myself more than to trust in others. And as a result, I will be more fair and more just to others. Because as they say, never let someone's injustice sway you from being just. And that's it.
That's Najjar Abdul-Musawir. His story was recorded on November 8, 2014, during the Carbondale Community Arts University commemoration of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. WSIU's The Listening Project is a community engagement initiative that chronicles the stories, experiences, and history of the people who call this region home.